Good morning, everyone. Lots going on as usual. And as usual, I'll remind you, join the mailing list. You can join the mailing list at CanadaReport.co. You can also support the show by clicking on this link here if you shop at Amazon. It won't cost you anything and it'll support the show. You can buy my book from Amazon here and join the mailing list on the sidebar here. Sign up for our Kitchen Table Talks at this link here. There's a whole lot of people who show up and it's a lot of fun. And we had people from Alberta and we had people from way out west in First Nations islands and people from Nova Scotia and all across Canada, and we all sit around and we chat about just how crazy life's gotten, right? It has gotten nuts. I think we're just about to see the turn, right? I think we're just about to go into the what's that in Strange Things, the underground, the underworld, whatever that is. We're just about to see the next step of this, and it's going to be bleak. I think it's going to be dark. You can buy my book. Ooh, right, let's get away from that for a minute. I'll tell you what I'm talking about. I'm going to show you. It's very, very scary, I think, what's happening. Anyway, you can buy my book without Amazon if you don't like Amazon directly from my website, CanadaPoly.com. And you can click on the Amazon link or the Amazon link for my book or join the mailing list or sign up for the Kitchen Table Talks all on the same or on the sidebar at CanadaPoly.com. You can check out the forums as well. Locals is something to mention, and Purple Ribbon Campaign, blah, blah, blah. All my purple ribbons around here got taken down, which I guess isn't surprising. You know, I'll put them back up. We'll see. Let's get into the news. Shipping and supply chain issues. This is becoming a big issue. And the October email last year said it would be. And here we are. Isn't that odd? Is that like confirmation? Does that make you feel better? It doesn't, right? I'd rather be wrong about this one. I'd rather be like, oh, here we are in Q4 and Christmas is great and there's all sorts of things on the shelf. You can totally buy whatever you want to buy. But the reality is I don't know that that's true, right? Like, I'm not sure. So very, very interesting stuff. I'm not sure how it's all going to play out. This is a map. It says, look at all these cargo ships holding patterns, some over a month. Officials have denied port entry. This is why we're having product shortages. So Vancouver doesn't look so bad. Los Angeles, California looks terrible. New York and Washington, they look normal to me, like New York, Georgia, Florida there. They've got shipping boats, or they've got green boats there that look to be tracked by this. And it looks like they're not backed up, right? So we've got some movement of shipping. So I don't want to overblow this. I don't want to overrepresent this or misrepresent this. That's not what I'm intending to do here. I'm not trying to stoke a panic or anything like that. It just looks like Los Angeles is very backed up. I wonder why that is, right? Is there some plausible explanation, right? Does anybody have any firsthand accounts of what's going on in New York, Toronto, or Vancouver? Are the Vancouver ports backed up as well? I've heard that there are some delays, but it's not months long, like the tweet says. So I don't know, but I've also heard shipping costs have gone up by 500%, right? So is that the cost of actually shipping, or is it the cost of sitting in port for a month in Los Angeles, right? Or cost of delays at port? I don't know. I really don't. But there is something impacting something. And Bloomberg Opinion picked it up. So it's an opinion piece, right? Not exactly hard news, but still there's a tweet stream here or tweet thread. And it says, walk around a supermarket in the United States or Europe, and you'll see some empty shelves once more. Supply chains are getting clogged at almost every stage between Asian factories and grocery stockrooms. Raising prices and patchy availability mean it's only a matter of time before shoppers start purchasing in bulk. Supply lines are struggling as producers who are responsible for making everything from sneakers to coffee are hurt by COVID restrictions. So we're creating this crisis with bad policy, okay? Surging virus cases and consumer demand are leading to congested ports. Shipping containers are in the wrong place. Sea freight costs are up tenfold. Shortages of workers to harvest and prepare foods are adding to the pressures. Beverages have been hurt by a shortage of packaging. In Britain, a lack of CO2 amid spiraling energy costs have put supplies of carbonated soft drinks at risk. Coffee and tea are hot commodities as many Americans continue to work remotely. In-person learning has fueled a rush for school supplies, including those that go in lunchboxes. Parents are now in a frantic state because of a run on Kraft's prepackaged Lunchables. Purina maker Nestle has already ramped up capacity. Some grocers are reporting a struggle to find enough dog treats and cat biscuits to meet the demand from all those new pandemic pets. Retailers have been re-engineering their supply chains to avoid the pinch points. Some have been chartering their own ships. Stores may have to cut back on varieties of goods to reduce complexity, meaning fewer product choices for consumers. Grocers need to plan for the worst. With the system so fragile now, what would happen to, with further spikes in price, demand, and panic buying? What happens if you can't get truckers, right? This is what's happening in the UK. And now, because they can't get truckers to deliver gasoline, they're seeing gasoline shortages, right? Not great. I'll talk about that later in the show. When prices go up, consumers tend to get proactive and change their habits. Shoppers first switch out of pricier products to cheaper ones. That means ditching big brands for more competitive price private labels. With food costs expected to rise further, consumers may choose to load up on products such as pet food while they can. It wouldn't be surprising to see people get together with friends to buy giant packs of toilet paper or mincemeat. If you're in a situation where you need to call your friends and be like, listen, we've got to go in and get this. Did you see the monster, the 26 pack of toilet paper? Yeah, we've got to go in together and get that. Maybe, like, you've got other, there's other things going on, right? Like, I don't think we're there yet. And if we get there, like, then it's time for the three seashells. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Somebody's got to figure it out. Ask, what's his name? Oh my goodness. The guy who played Rocky. Sylvester Stallone. Him. Ask him. While a little inflation is generally good for supermarkets, the danger comes when it exceeds manageable levels and consumers trade down to cheaper items. Up until now, grocers haven't had a bad pandemic. That may be about to change. So, I mean, you know, I hope that that is not happening. I hope that we're able to correct the supply chain. We were able to do that last year, and now we seem to be we seem to be legislating ourselves into these crises, all of them, including the healthcare crisis that we're legislating and then firing nurses to keep on track, right? Liberals, governance. The Liberals are to make immigration to Canada easier, right? It wasn't easy enough, right? Get a plane ticket and cross at Roxham Road. No, now it's time to make it easier. The Trudeau Liberals are planning to remove nearly all grounds to immigration department uses to exclude applicants, the Toronto Sun has learned. It has been the Trudeau government's goal since 2020 to increase Canada's intake of immigrants and refugees by nearly one-third to 400,000 yearly. How they plan to achieve this elevated level is outlined in an internal draft document sent to immigration and refugee judges, documents that have been exclusively shared with the Sun. In an email sent to staff and adjudicators, on September 20th, Richard Wex, the Liberals' appointee as chairperson and chief executive officer of the Immigration and Refugee Board of Canada, laid out a massive expansion of the reasons immigrants can be allowed to enter and stay in Canada. Under the new guidelines contained in a document marked draft and covered by solicitor-client privilege, civil service officers who do an initial screening of immigration and refugee claims, plus the immigration and refugee judges who hear appeals of the officer's decisions, are instructed to accept any applicant who has an intersectional claim. Intersectionality is defined as two or more race, religion, political beliefs, socioeconomic status, age, sexual orientation, culture, disability, or immigration status that impact an individual's lived experience of discrimination, marginalization, or oppression. No longer will claimants need to prove, for instance, that they face torture or death if forced to return to their home countries, nor will they have to satisfy the UN's definition of a refugee. Now, if they merely claim that they have been discriminated against or persecuted for being poor and old, or Indigenous, and holding political views targeted by some developing country's strongman in the Liberals come. One of the principal tasks of the immigration officers and judges is to determine whether a claimant is telling the truth. The Trudeau Liberals have covered that too. Chairperson Wex instructs his staff and judges to remember that trauma, whether physical or emotional, can cause people to recollect information or incidents incorrectly. Oh, they're experiencing it differently. Oh. Therefore, if applicants provide evidence that turns out to be false, it may not be because they're lying. They're just experiencing it differently, just like the Prime Minister, right? Right. Currently on vacation in the Magdalen Islands and nearly spit out my drink when I saw the HST and GST being titled Legault and Trudeau on my tax receipt. I find this hilarious, but I'm also wondering if this is normal in Quebec. I kind of like it. I think it's a good, I don't know. Makes you understand exactly where your money's going, right? $7 to have the privilege of eating out, right? GST, HST, right? There you go. To the province, to the federal government. And that's on top of all the other taxes you pay, the income taxes, the taxes on your heating and cooling, taxes on running your home, taxes on gasoline, tax on gasoline, carbon tax, right? Oh, that's the total with the HST included. And we'll charge the carbon tax on all of that. Yeah, Well, that's good. That makes it better. Ha. Right? Ha, I say. Can someone explain to me why a bunch of modern countries are starting to put out little signals to the public that they may not have energy this winter? Yeah. So I said in yesterday we were doing our kitchen table talk that we kind of got into this, and I said, would that not be, well, I said, Canada is very self-sufficient. We have oil, we have land, we have beef, we have chicken, we have dairy and poultry, or dairy and eggs and all sorts of, we're a very diverse country. We have a lot of stuff. We export a lot of this stuff. So if we started seeing, like, I don't know, an inability to have our energy needs met outside of Canada, if all of a sudden our Saudi Arabian hookup was like, oh, sorry, Justin, we can't do that. How quickly do you think we'd be able to turn on Canadian production to maintain like our way of life? Or do you think that there would be some reason not to? Climate change? Would climate change justify not responding to a crisis like what's happening in the UK right now? What's happening in the UK right now is well, we'll get there right now. Hold on. That's where we're at. Here is, actually, and there's one more. UK suspends competition laws to tackle the fuel crisis. So there is a massive situation unfolding in the United Kingdom right now, and it's big enough that the Ottawa Citizen is talking about it. Interesting. I scooped them. So here's the Ottawa Citizen. UK suspends competition law to tackle fuel crisis. Britain suspended competition laws on Sunday to allow competing fuel suppliers to share information and coordinate their response to petrol shortages. While there's always been and continues to be plenty of fuel at refineries and terminals, we are aware that there have been some issues with supply chains, business manager or minister Kwasi Kwarteng, excuse me if I got that wrong, said following a meeting with industry representatives. This is why we enact the downstream oil protocols to ensure industry can share vital information and work together more effectively to ensure disruption is minimized. BP said nearly a third of its British petrol stations had run out of the two main grades of fuel on Sunday as panic buying forced the government to suspend competition laws and allow firms to work together to ease the shortages. Lines of vehicles formed at petrol stations for a third day running as motorists waited, some for hours, to fill up with fuel after oil firms reported a lack of drivers was causing the transport problem from refineries to forecourts. So to just basically supply chain delivery, right? Lorry drivers, truck drivers. And so Canada turning on its production wouldn't do a darn thing. These guys are saying there's lots of fuel in the refineries, but we can't get it to the stations because there's not enough trucking, there's not enough people to do it. But what's happening as well is I was watching Twitter, and I follow a lot of British people just because when I get up in the morning, they're talking about what's going on in their country. And not that I'm necessarily interested in that specifically, I'm interested in it generally, but what's happening in the UK kind of echoes what happens here. And I have family in the UK, so I've been watching and paying attention to kind of their political moves because their system, our system is based off of their system. So it's very troubling to see what's happening in their courts currently, and has been for years. But I watch what's happening in the UK a lot. And there were a lot of people in the last couple of days saying, the news is saying that there's lineups, but there was one person who waited 5 minutes because they had the gas door that opened on the left and the only pumps available opened on the right. And so they waited behind the car. That's what the person was saying. He's like, there's no lineup here. Like, what is going on? What are you people saying, right? So the UK does not need any more foreign truck drivers. They're trying to recruit foreign truck drivers. They're saying there's a labor shortage and they can't hire truck drivers. But somebody called around and they were offering £12, which is like $20, $25, £12 an hour to drive truck, which I don't think is a very, I'm not sure that's like, we have an emergency and we need to hire as many of these people as possible, right? So like, I don't know. But anyway, this guy says, the UK does not need any more foreign truck drivers. It needs a government and media who do not use behavioral psychology to stoke up fear and fabricate crises. That's happening here too, right? We have the BBC, we have the CBC, right? And BBC is actually quite a lot more right-wing than CBC. CBC is unbelievably left-wing. It's damagingly left-wing. The stuff they put on there is, well, the drag queen thing, the Desmond the Amazing thing, all of that stuff is, it's not empowering. That's not helpful. When a kid hasn't gone through puberty yet, and you're using the media to groom that child, that's not a beneficial plus thing. That's not something we should all go, great, Canada's really, really progressive. Right? That's not something to celebrate. That's something to be weary of and fearful of. Lithuanian, okay, let's get into China a little bit. Lithuanian defense minister has told citizens of Lithuania to throw away their Chinese phones, as it's found that Xiaomi, I think that's how you say that, phones are automatically censoring keywords like Free Tibet and Taiwan independence and democracy movement. Also, these phones can be remotely switched on. Boycott China. So, yeah. Well, are you surprised by any of that? I'm not. I can't say that I'm surprised by any of that. Like, thinking, realizing what's gone on in the past 40 years is kind of what 2020 and 2021 is about. And, like, people are realizing what's been going on. Like, people are realizing that, well, the spying and the spy rings and all of that other stuff. And nothing's happening about it. But people are awake to that fact. Like, people know who Epstein is, right? And there's a whole bunch of other things that have happened that, well, like I was talking about yesterday, there's some undeniable, like, facts that people seem unable to deal with, right? Like I said in my example yesterday during my kitchen table talk about Bill Clinton, but there are other undeniable facts. Like there's more cases and deaths now than there were last year. So, like, what's up with that? And everybody seems paralyzed by that. And paralyzed into, you know what we need to do? Vax passports. It's weird, right? Like, that seems really, like, how's that the solution? Explain to me how that works. We haven't done that in 18 months, 20 months, 2 years. And now vax passports, that's the way out. What? Explain how it works exactly. It excludes people from society, yes. How does this cut down on virus transmission if vaccinated people can spread the virus? I don't understand. Again, maybe I'm an idiot. I'm okay to be an idiot. It's all right. There's some things I'm okay at. I wrote a book. Anyway, Andrew Coyne shares, and I just thought this whole exchange tickled me as funny. Andrew Coyne shared, I don't know if he wrote this. I'm not going to go check out the byline because I don't want to give Global Times China a click. But Andrew Coyne's cool with it. And he says, the news, according to the Global Times, and he says, exclusive, two Canadians confess guilt, granted bail for medical reasons before leaving China. Source, Global Times. Okay, so, and then somebody called him, like, are you Chinese? And he said, yeah, no, I'm not Chinese, but I would say that, wouldn't I? And the whole thing tickled me. Gene Gene says, I cannot believe you're posting this. Do you work for the Chinese? As cheap and sleazy as it gets, Mr. Coyne. And he says, I do not work for the Chinese. But then I would say that, wouldn't I? The whole thing tickled me. I thought it was funny. And no, I don't think that he's working for the Chinese. I think that he was just giving the Chinese spin on things. But I think that it's the whole freeing the two Michaels at the same day as Ming Wenzhou and the Chinese influence in Canada is painfully obvious. And I don't know, is this tone deaf? I'm not sure. Is it a bad idea to share this headline if he's sharing it for, like, this is what China is saying, informational? And that's kind of what he's saying here. The news, according to the Global Times, right? That this is what China is saying. Is that a fair thing to share? I don't know. Like, is that worth a column? I'm not sure. Anyway, that whole thing just tickled me. I thought it was kind of funny. Healthcare, they're manufacturing this crisis. And the Truth Post is a little slower than me. On September 26th, they say, maybe I should follow them. They say, I'm starting to believe the government are purposely firing hospital staff for refusing the vaccine to create another crisis in order to implement emergency powers and force everyone to get vaccinated. Yeah, I think maybe he's right. Right? 172 Windsor staff suspended without pay for not getting COVID-19 shots. 136 Kingston staff in a hospital violating vaccine mandate. We're in the middle of a pandemic, everybody. You have to believe us how dangerous this is. It's the most dangerous situation that's ever been. And we have to fire all of you people. It is less dangerous to not have you here than it is to shut down our healthcare and remove you. I don't believe that. I don't believe that in a pandemic you would do that to people, right? I think that it's up to them. And I think that it's up to them even when the government tells you it's super, super scary. Right? Even if the government says you really should, I think you should still have the choice. And the Nuremberg Code says that you have the choice. And all of the laws that underpin our democracy and our base cornerstone foundation of our country say that we have the choice. And right now they're saying that you might have the choice, but you don't get the choice to work here. But that's not without coercion. And that's not okay. It's not okay for the government to do it. It's not okay for the hospitals to do it. It's not okay for them to manufacture this crisis. I would love accountability. I would love accountability for this. But their whole argument is we're keeping people safe. I'll show you. Ottawa hospital fires 400 nurses and doctors, thus closing 70 beds in the hospital. The intention now is to blame COVID for deaths and unvaxxed in particular on hospitalization. Remain staff asked to sign non-disclosure agreements. Please share. Ah, this is the crux. Something that people have been talking about before all this happened, was if they remove all of the people who are opposed to this, then the only people remaining are the true believers. And will they sign non-disclosure agreements? Sure. Will they whistleblow on you? Probably not, right? Probably not, because they're true believers. Man, I can't believe COVID got another one. Oh, when were they vaxxed again? Oh, well, such a shame, right? It cleanly gets rid of the whistleblowers. It cleanly gets rid of the people that you don't want there anyway, if you are not in the midst of a pandemic, but are instead in the midst of something else entirely. I don't know what's happening, but it seems really clear that it's not what we're being told. Like, what we're being told is a very distracting and interesting story, but it doesn't appear to be true in the strictest sense of things, right? As you would define true in, say, the year 2000, right? Like, anyway, unvaccinated staff at the Ottawa hospital will be placed on unpaid leave on November 1st. So I don't know if this was in response to a notification letter that went out today that said, as of November 1st, you're on unpaid leave. And they said, this is impacting 400 staff, right? So I'm not entirely sure the context. I was trying to verify, but I couldn't verify. This is the best I've got. So this is from yesterday, 4 a.m. And it says, doctors, nurses, and staff at the Ottawa Hospital now have 36 days to be fully vaccinated against COVID-19 or face an unpaid suspension. In a statement to CTV News Ottawa, the Ottawa Hospital says all staff, medical staff, and learners who are not fully vaccinated on November 1st will be placed on an unpaid leave of absence. On August 24th, the Ottawa Hospital announced all staff working in the hospital environment would need to have received their first dose of COVID-19 vaccine by September 7th and their second dose by October 15th. So manufactured crisis, I think. Here is Viva Fry pointing something out in response to this absurd theatrics, COVID theatrics. This is yesterday. Hold on. This is 5 months ago. And here we go. This is how they started their...
Good afternoon, everyone, and our apologies.
Their press conferences 5 months ago. Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. She hasn't. All the theatrics don't exist here.
Good afternoon, everyone, and our apologies for the brief delay. Welcome to today's update on COVID-19 in Alberta. With us, as always, is Dr. Dina Hinshaw, Chief Medical Officer of Health for the province. Dr. Hinshaw will provide a brief update, and then we will open the floor to questions.
Thank you, Tom, and good afternoon, everyone.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone, and our apologies for the brief delay. Welcome to today's update on COVID-19 in Alberta. With us, as always, is Dr. Dina Hinshaw.
There you go. Okay, sorry about that. And here is yesterday. I showed this yesterday. It's just maddeningly smug and full of theatrics. Does this help anyone? No.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for coming.
Smug, just smug. And like Viva Fry says, it's funny how barely 5 months ago, Dina Hinshaw, Alberta's chief medical officer, didn't start her press conferences with this theater of the absurd. Indeed, indeed true. Here is Jason Kenney resisting calls for a hard lockdown in Alberta, right? Dina Hinshaw is putting the mask on, washing her hands, being smug, right? And Premier Jason Kenney rejects calls for a hard lockdown during an appearance on a radio program Sunday, the same day that his province's former top doctor signed a letter calling for immediate firebreak measures to deal with surging cases of COVID-19. Watch for that. They're going to use the firebreak rhetoric. The word firebreak is going to, I think, be used like, oh no, it's getting so bad, we need a firebreak. What happened to the efficacy of the vaccine? I'll show you. It seems like, in a minute, we get to a CTV Toronto article that talks about how the cases were supposed to be at 1,000 a day and they're not, and they've been flat all September. So the cases aren't materializing. So does that look like a success? Is that a success if you compare last year to this year, and this year we have more cases, deaths, and hospitalizations, but it's flat? Is that better? Like, I don't know, right? Like, I don't know. I don't know. But they're trying to push further lockdowns in Alberta, and they're trying to say it's because of the unvaccinated to a certain degree. Slayer Jamin says, why aren't people getting temporary layoffs instead of being fired for choosing not to get vaxxed? These passports are only supposed to be temporary, right? Snap, right? That's on the heels of the all of these nurses and doctors and healthcare staff being placed on unpaid leave. They'll be terminated. There's a bunch of them that will be terminated after the unpaid leave is finished because they're not complying with the new policy of your body, my choice, says the hospital, right? So welcome to Canada, where your employer gets to dictate your medical choices, right? Very crazy. But yes, great question. Wonderful question. Hold on a second. Going back quickly to Michael, the two Michaels, during the kitchen table talk yesterday, Max asked if the two Michaels had to spend any time in a COVID quarantine hotel. And during the show, he like live checked and fact checked it for me. And he said they did not have to spend any time in a COVID quarantine hotel. So that's kind of funny. Like you go from a Chinese prison to Canada. And I was saying, wouldn't it be jarring? Wouldn't it be incredibly, unbelievably jarring to be abducted by China in 2018 and then arrive in Canada in 2021 and just be like, oh, you know, I'd love to go to a McDonald's. Do you have your vaccine passport? Right? No, I need 21 days for whatever. We'll go to a drive-thru, right? Like, love to go to a Kelsey's, man. I love their Philly cheesesteak or something like that, right? And they're like, oh, sorry, man. We can order in? Like, he's like, oh, I made the joke like he'd want to go back to China, but maybe that was in poor taste. Anyway, regardless, it wasn't meant to be in poor taste. It was meant to criticize the Canadian government's slide into authoritarian tyranny and communism. Anyway, regardless, for much of the summer, the province's top doctors warned of a September surge followed by a bleak fall and winter. However, the cases just aren't materializing, right? Ontario's daily COVID-19 case counts are lower than what many experts had expected by now. And while they point to a number of factors for the relative relief, they say now is not the time to ease up on these measures. For much of the summer, the province's top doctor warned of a September surge followed by a bleak fall and winter. This has not materialized yet, as the daily case counts remain under 1,000. I think there were like not even 600 today. And the graph of Ontario's seven-day average roughly shows a plateau since the beginning of September. That's well under the worst-case scenario in Ontario's most recent modeling, which showed about 4,000 cases a day by now. 4,000, right? We're not even at 600. Maybe 600. I don't know. Like around there. Reality is more in line with the best-case scenario, in which cases would have steadily fallen since September 1st. Well, that's interesting. But due to modeling, we're going to need to keep the vaccine passports to 2022, says Dr. Moore. This is Ontario's top doctor. That's Dr. Tam, but it's Dr. Moore. Says proof of vaccine certificates, vaccine passports. There's a reason they're not using the term vaccine passport. It's very unpopular. Anyway, vaccine passports will be in place through the winter, with modeling showing the potential for significant rise in COVID cases after the holidays. So from now until the holidays, we have to have the passport in place, even though we're provably doing better than they expected by a whole lot, by like underneath it by a factor of, well, I don't even know. I couldn't ballpark. Let's say we have 700 cases, which I know that's high. Let's say we have that. Whatever 7,000 or 700 less 4,000 is, we're way under it, right? That's a big factor. And it's unbelievable that they're saying, oh yeah, well, the modeling is bad enough. We got to keep this passport in place, right? These guys say the rates are lower than expected due to the public health measures, right? Oh yeah, well, except that the public health measures didn't take effect until September 22nd, right? This is not, and September has been completely flat. This is not because of the health passports, the movement passports, the vaccine passports, the tyrannical licenses that are, what, two steps away from a bodily tattoo, right? Unbelievable. Yeah, we'll just put it on the wrist. It'll be way easier than scanning that, you know, nasty old cell phone, right? Ridiculous. What will the explanation be when rates inevitably rise in the winter, even after many unclean are banished from civilization? Yeah, I feel like there's more coming. The other shoe's going to drop soon. And actually, the Pfizer people are going for the... I think that this is coming up soon. Hold on, I'll double check. This, I think, is the other shoe that's going to drop. Pfizer's planning to ask the U.S. regulators to authorize COVID for children under 12 as early as this week. So I think that that's going to be the next shoe to drop. People are not going to... well, when they start talking about, yay, we can vaccinate children, and now we want, you know, 90% or whatever of the total population, now that's a whole different conversation. And how do you stop that, right? How do you stop this all? Like, we're being inched into it, and every inch, you can't get it back. You can't walk it back, right? Daniel Andrews has warned that he's not set a timeline for when unvaccinated Victorians, this is Australia, will be able to enjoy more freedoms once the state reaches 70% of its population double dosed. We're at 75%. I think we're above 70% in Ontario. In Guelph, we're above 75% double dosed. I think we're at 80% double dosed now in Guelph, 90% single dosed, 80% double dosed. And the idea that any of this is going away because of vaccination, guys, wake up. This whole thing is about the vaccine passport. None of anybody's freedoms are coming back ever. Vaccinated, unvaccinated, the whole thing. It's all a farce. They're telling it's the carrot and the stick. You go because you think that there's a carrot at the end of it. There's no carrot at the end of it. They've stated the fee. Okay, so I've compared what's happening to Nazi Germany, and people have been uncomfortable with that. And I understand that. It's an uncomfortable comparison to make. And it's an uncomfortable comparison to make just because, as well, the history of the era is very, it's very interesting. Stalin killed 29 million of his own citizens, right? And you know what we said? We were like, you know what? We gotta get with that guy, because only with him is how we can kill and defeat Hitler, right? So I asked my mother-in-law when she started learning about the Holocaust, and she said, I don't know, sometime in the mid-70s, 80s. My dad, too. I said, you guys didn't learn about that in the 50s in like high school? I think you were in high school in the, or 60s, right? Nothing? He said, no. And it wasn't like that was strange. He was like, no, didn't learn anything about it. Nothing. Nothing at all. It's amazing how history is just like, right? Like January 6th, right? Or like, what else? What other situations? There's history that has is reimagined different than the reality of the situation. So anyway, I just think it's interesting. The Allies were like, you know, we've got to look past those 29 million people, and we got to take out this Hitler guy, right? There's so much about it that is very interesting. But anyway, I make Holocaust comparisons to what's happening now because it seems like it fits really, it maps really, really well to that. Here is a letter from Holocaust survivors. We're an international association of lawyers, doctors, scientists, journalists, as well as representatives of other professions. We represent interests of all people in the world who aspire to live in freedom, self-determination, dignity, and truthfulness. A letter in support of the request for investigation to the ICC from the UK, Slovakia, France, and the Czech Republic. Dear prosecutor of the ICC, Mr. Karim Khan, we, the undersigned, as Nazi concentration camp survivors of the atrocities committed against humanity during the Second World War, feel bound to follow our conscience and write this letter in support of the joint request for investigation to the International Criminal Court submitted on behalf of the UK, Slovakia, France, and the Czech Republic on the 12th of August, 2021. The contents of the request include sworn affidavits from expert witnesses Dr. Fleming, Professor Luke Montagnier, sorry if I got that wrong, and Dr. McCarran, sorry if I got that wrong. It's obvious to us that another horrific series of events, this time affecting all people around the world, is taking place before our eyes. However, the majority of the world's populace do not yet realize what is happening, for the magnitude of an organized crime such as this is beyond their scope of experience. We, however, know. We remember the name of Joseph Mengele. Some of us have personal memories. We experience a deja vu that is so horrifying that we rise to shield our poor fellow humans. The threatened innocents now include children and even infants. In just 4 months, the COVID vaccine has killed more people than all available vaccines combined from mid-1997 until the end of 2013, a period of 15 and a half years. And people between 15.5 years, so not quite 15 and a half years. And people between 18 and 64 years old who were barely at risk from COVID-19 and consequently barely showed up in mortality statistics on or with COVID-19 accounted for up to 80% of records as victims of vaccination. The Edge of Vigilance database reports that through September 18th, 2021, there are 14,863 deaths and 3,691,366 injuries reported following injections of four experimental COVID-19 so-called vaccines. As for the real number, the famous Lazarus report from Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare Incorporated in 2009 revealed that in general, only 1% of adverse events from vaccines is ever being reported. So I feel like there are some people who agree with me, and I think that the signals map. I think that the things that are happening, the disregard for personal freedom, the personal ability to determine what is happening in your life to your body, that maps really well. And the othering of a specific subgroup of people, Canadians wouldn't go with othering a religion, right? Or a majority group of people, even a minority group of people. If somebody was like, those, I don't know, pick one, doesn't matter. I don't want to, because somebody will say that I don't like them, but it doesn't matter to me, right? If you're a decent human being, I'm just fine with you. So pick a subset and say, you know, this subset of people, right? For a religious reason, or for a skin color reason, or for a whatever reason, for some kind of reason, we have to remove them. But humans don't work like that. The only way humans work, and I'll show you maybe in a minute some rhetoric used to get there. But the way humans work is they don't shun people because they don't like them. They shun people because they fear that those other people will unintentionally get them sick or kill them. And it was the rhetoric used for the Jews in the Holocaust during the 1940s. And I've seen examples of this rhetoric used to remove the Jews from society, right? So as far as I can understand, that's pretty well written in the history books now. But see my talk from earlier, right? Who knows? It's all in flux, right? So from what I can tell, they used that same thing, but they did that with the lepers, right? Way back in the Bible, right? And the Archdiocese of Hamilton is saying, like, unvaccinated can't work here. But part of the foundation of our country is opening up to all, right? Like, oh, being tolerant and being, right? Going out and seeing the people, et cetera, right? So I think that it's very interesting that the rhetoric is being used to turn a formerly tolerant society into a group of people who, because you have to, once you agree that these people are dangerous, that these people may get you sick, regardless of whether they want to get you sick or not, they made their choice because they're not vaccinated. And we all know that unvaccinated people get us sick, says Justin Trudeau. So we all know that the way to deal with these evil unvaccinated people, because they made a bad choice, is to put them in isolation camps, right? They're using the rhetoric now to set the tracks for this. I want to be wrong about this, okay? I want to be very wrong about this. I hope that I'm very wrong about this, okay? Because if I'm not wrong about this, it feels like I should go, right? Because it's clear they don't want people like me here, right? And it is. It is. People like people who are willing to ask the tough questions, right? People who are willing to say, this doesn't match up, these things don't make sense, what you're saying, what you're selling is not believable because it's not actually reflected out in the real world. What you're selling is only happening in the circles that you speak and the newspapers that you read, but it's not actually happening in the real world, right? And so it's very, the whole faulty nature of the news media has been constructed. And if you are outside of that, they don't want you around. And so they don't want people like me around. So, you know, if I'm wrong about this, or if I'm not wrong about this, either I go voluntarily or they're gonna find a place for me. And I hope I'm wrong, man, because the place they find for me is not gonna be good. I don't wanna go there. My daughter and I did a rapid test for shits and giggles, testing tap water. The tap water tested positive for COVID. Dun, dun, dun. We should start testing tap water. Because, like, if tap water's COVID positive, everybody's drinking it. Holy smokeronis, right? It's terrifying. Terrifying. You drop dead just by drinking tap water. The U.S. plans to ask U.S. or the Pfizer plans to ask U.S. regulators to authorize COVID-19 for children under 12 as early as this week. Whew. Yikes. I think that might be that might be the breaking point for a lot of people. But what, how do you unwind this? How do you say no? Because what they're going to do is it's going to coincide with the QR code for vaccine, right? For like they'll give us time. I don't know if they'll give us time. They'll start trying to vaccinate people as soon as they get the approval, like NACI or whatever. They'll say, oh yeah, it's safe because they say it's safe, and we say it's safe, you say it's safe. It's all safe, right? So they start sending kids out. It won't be right away that it's mandatory, but as soon as, say, October 22nd hits, or maybe November 1st hits or something like that, an arbitrary date, they'll say, listen, now you've had your chance to make the good choice. And if you haven't made the good choice for your safety, because unvaccinated people spread disease, you have to stay home from school. You can only do online school if you're unvaccinated. And then they'll mandate it somehow and then say, even if you have an exemption, you can only do online school. And then, I don't want to give anyone ideas, but they will then turn it up. Because if there's kids who are unvaccinated, presumably their parents are unvaccinated. And so what will the next step be? I'll let you think about it. I'll let you think about what they could possibly do. But it's not good. And it ends in the same place. And when people come, somebody said yesterday, O'Looney said this. And I linked it yesterday on the Kitchen Table Talk. O'Looney said, listen, they'll come for your kids. They'll start injecting your kids. And if kids start dying, people will say no. And if they say no, and then That's when they'll say there's an excuse to bring in the military, because these people are saying no, they're not being reasonable. Here is the best way out of this pandemic is to do this. They're standing in the way. We have to protect society from them. They'll use the news to back it up. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. But it seems like an obvious, if you're watching a chess game and you can see a close and you can see a checkmate and you think that the person's going there and they start making the moves to go there with that checkmate that you see, it makes sense to be like, oh, you know, this and then this and then this and then checkmate, right? And this and then this and then this and then checkmate. We're already there, right? And the moves to counter it are what, right? And it's like, you don't see the checkmate if you're the opponent, or you do see the checkmate and you can play to stall. Good luck getting out of it, right? Unless you're a better chess player, and we don't even realize we're playing game. So it's very frustrating. Very, very frustrating. Sitting in the stands and watching the chess moves and watching the monkey that is, you know, our representative, right? Who's playing right into the checkmate. Rachel Notley, speaking of, says vaccine passports are key to fighting COVID-19. I'm challenging every UCP MLA, the representatives in Alberta, to call for mandatory vaccine passports for non-essential businesses and call them vaccine passports too. No more political games. Yeah, they are vaccine passports, Rachel Notley, and people want them and they don't realize what's going to happen once they're in. My union, says Paul Manning, who I've paid dues into for 16 years, will not supply a lawyer, even though they're contractually obliged to. Using my dues, they supplied lawyers to Hansen, Ruthowski, Milburn, the Action 5, Meller, and Diesner. Rigged system. I can't win, eh? So that one's interesting to me, just because when you pay into union dues, you should get represented. This guy, I think, is a former cop, and he's going to. There's a lot going on with the Toronto police. There's a woman who's constantly talking about the Me Too aspects of things that have happened, and she was a former uniformed officer, and she's got, you know, text messages to back up her claims. Same with him. But here's the rhetoric I was talking about. People who choose not to get vaccinated for COVID-19 due to personal preference or singular beliefs do not have the right to accommodations under Ontario human rights law, the province's watchdog said. So I had a conversation with a lawyer friend of mine the other day, and I said, well, the Ontario Human Rights Tribunal said this, and he said, no, they didn't. And then he linked me to the thing. He said, what does that say? And I said, okay, well, it's not the Ontario Human Rights Tribunal, but the governing bodies, right, and the watchdogs are saying the same thing. So people think that. And so if people think that, they're not even going to try to fight back against this. But if you do try to fight back against it, you get tackled by cops, right? Or bouncers? I'm not entirely sure. Now, this guy's 70 years old. He was
For your rights, you get tackled by the police.
Make sure you film what restaurant it is.
Yeah, we got the Earl's restaurant. We're in here claiming a medical exemption, standing up for vaccine passports, and we have a police officer who came and tackled somebody. Oh, look, and he's got a good friend to help him out. You guys should be...
Police were called, and they are not being... They're not saying, you're under arrest, I'll put you, but they're tackling people, 70-year-old people. So, I mean, that's interesting. Here is Dr. Wolf, and she's talking about the vaccine passports. And I think that, like my chess analogy, I think that she sees the checkmate, and she's trying to warn the monkey who's playing our side that the checkmate is imminent. How it works, how it's going to play out. And if you see it, maybe you can stop it. But like I said, we don't even know we're playing chess. Here's Dr. Wolf. She's a doctor of philosophy, I heard. I don't know. So again, grain of salt. But what she lays out here, it doesn't matter what she's a doctor of. She understands the stakes in a way that a lot of people don't. Here we go.
The vaccine passports really are the last step. Someone said today, the hill worth dying on. The last fight that we have to fight. Because once the passport vaccines are accepted, there is no more resistance. There is no more choice. Please don't be fooled. This is the most dangerous tool that humanity has faced in my lifetime, if not ever, in terms of human liberty. If you don't participate, you don't get let into the supermarket to buy food. You don't get let into the pub to meet your friends. You can't get into the restaurant. You can't travel on an airplane. You can't travel on a bus. You can't travel on a train. The vaccine passport platform is the same platform as a social credit system, like in China, that enslaves 1 billion people. So if you're a dissident, you can always be positive for COVID. And there is no way to challenge it, no way to verify it, and you'll be in a second-class category in society for the rest of your life, and your family will too. You're asked to swipe that QR code. It goes to a central database, and all the people who are with you, who are also swiping, their information is also going to a central database. Maps of networks of people. And as you all swipe in your vaccine passport to that cafe or to that restaurant, it is geolocating you. Like Microsoft, they've said explicitly that the system can keep people who are positive from leaving the house. Microsoft Salesforce rolled out an alignment of the vaccine passport with Apple Pay and with Google Wallet. And with a digital currency, you know what's next. If you're not a quote-unquote good citizen, if you see a movie you shouldn't see, if you go to a play you shouldn't go to, which the app will know, right? Because you have to scan it everywhere you go. Your revenue stream can be shut off. You don't have any choice except to get it back by being a good citizen. And more from my heart, this is the cliff. Like, this is suicidal. This is the last.
So they can turn you off. Essentially, if you do things they don't like, they can turn you off, right? Say your money is no good here because it doesn't work, right? John Tory, here's more rhetoric. The protesters are spreading misinformation, harassing innocent people and businesses, and showing no respect for police, security, or the rule of law. I support any action taken by police to address this, and I'm sure most members of the public do as well. Any actions taken by police to protect you from those evil anti-vaxxers, right? This is him referring to what we saw outside of the Eaton Center on Saturday as illegal behavior, and police are treating it as such. Two people have been arrested and charged already. I know the vast majority of people are angered and frustrated by these anti-vaccine, anti-mask protests. I am too. So if you protest climate change, no problem. You can shut down intersections, you can shut down hospitals, you can do whatever you want. But if you're anti-vaccine or anti-mask, you are social credit zero. Nothing, right? He carries on. We're close to bringing this pandemic to an end. No thanks to these so-called protesters and their misinformation and harassment. They are on the wrong side of history in this pandemic. While they tried to disrupt and create chaos outside, we know hundreds of people lined up in the Eaton Center and malls across the city to get vaccinated this weekend. That's the right thing to do, and that's the progress I'm focused on continuing. They're going to keep these things going forever. It's incredible. I can't believe it. And I think that that's the point. I think that you're not supposed to believe it until the trap shuts, right? And then you've got your leg trapped in there, and there's F all you can do. you checkmated and the game's over, right? City TV, the poll found that more than 3 in 4 respondents hold negative views of those who are not immunized, right? I demand my right to be ignorant and selfish. This guy's trying to make fun of people who are saying our basic rights matter. Our basic rights matter. Tension high between vaccinated and unvaccinated in Canada, poll suggests. They're using this rhetoric to justify a further crackdown on unvaccinated people. Play the game out. Play the chess game out. What does it look like to you? Okay, what it looks like to me is a checkmate in 4. Checkmate maybe 5. And here is what happens when you dehumanize people to this point. You get police officers, and we've already seen this happening in Canada and Vancouver. I just showed you at Earl's. This is what happens when people feel empowered. Oh no, it's going to do this. So there is people who are arresting people for protesting Australia, and I don't know context there, but it doesn't seem like it's good, right? That's not ideal situation to be in, right? Here is the last story for the day. Chris Sky, this guy, vote for Rob Gill, was posting. He says he's got a tweet out. He says, "London, Ontario, anti-masker and accused criminal Chris Sky is right now at the works, dining inside with a large unvaccinated group. Report him. London police, non-emergency." Blah blah blah. So this is the kind of country we live in now, right? The idea that a whole bunch of people going out to a restaurant together is a criminal act because of the beliefs of the person, one of the people at the table, right? Like, is this the country you want to live in, where people feel justified in creating tweets like that, right? A breathless tweet like that. Oh my goodness, he's out at a restaurant. Oh my gosh. And the people who are saying Chris Sky is, you know, bad or whatever, I don't know. I don't know enough about him. And like, the people who claim to know enough about him, the more you yell and scream about how terrible he is, the less I believe you. Like, I don't know, man. I don't know. And the thing is, I don't know what Chris Sky is all about, but people don't know what I'm all about. So, you know, whatever, right? Like, I do what I do because I'm motivated to do it. And I try to explain to people sometimes who ask me why I do what I do, but why I do what I do is to put something good into the world, hopefully, right? Because my kids are important to me, and I hope that they have good things in the world when they get to be my age. I hope they get the opportunities that I get, right? And so, like, my motivation is complex and multifaceted. It doesn't boil down to I get paid for this. I don't. A little bit. There are people who support me, and I appreciate that. I have things that I put out there that people buy, and I have things that people help me pay for through donations, and I appreciate all of that. But again, my motivation isn't for that. Like, doing this when I started wasn't, I want to get paid. I mean, that'd be nice, right? That's cool. That's wonderful. I like the monetization things that I've got going, but that was never the point of this. Fame, never the point of this, right? It was supposed to be anonymous, initially anyway. But to just say Chris Sky is bad, full stop, because you think he's an actor or you think he's whatever, and then you can't point to anything he's done necessarily that puts him on the wrong side. Like, Jason Kenney's bad, Doug Ford's bad, Justin Trudeau's bad, right? Like, and we're gonna talk about Chris Sky? Like, I don't know, man. He's walking around doing things that are actually getting in people's faces and getting things done and following the laws of the country that we used to live in. And people are trying to give him shit. I don't get it, right? But it doesn't bother me necessarily, because it's not me they're trying to give shit, but like, can't you see what he's doing? Like, can't you see? And like, if there's something I'm missing, fine, point it out to me. I'm interested. But saying, oh yeah, he's terrible, blah blah blah, because he's tattooed and he's a massive dude. Like, he's put a lot of work into his body. Like, have some respect, right? And if he wants to be tattooed, that's his body, right? Like, great, whatever, man. It's not up to you. It's not up to me. And people sometimes say that I don't take sides. No, the point is, I don't push my thoughts and feelings on other people. We live in a free country. You get to make a choice for you, right? If you want to be diverse or whatever, and diversity is the law of the country currently. I ran in an election that for a party that said we'd much rather repeal the diversity standpoint, the diversity direction that Mulroney set Canada on in 1987. Diversity is our strength is a propagandist slogan and one that is useless, in my opinion. And diversity doesn't make us strong. Diversity by itself isn't great, but I like the diverse culture that I live in, right? But I like the unity that the country used to provide, right? The linchpin of this country is Canada. This country is a free country based on free speech and these edicts and this rule of law that we all agree on. We're all playing the same game. You can have a difference of opinion. You can have a difference of culture. You can have a difference of a whole bunch of things and still agree on that and be just fine, it seems. But then in the early 2000s, we got people in charge who started pushing scary, divisive rhetoric and claiming that the problem is not the destabilizing forces being imported. And they were destabilizing forces being imported on purpose. Just look at what's happening in the US with the mass migration there. But instead, they were blaming the white people or people who had currently built the country. So like, and that people just didn't believe. Like they just rejected it and ignored it. But while we rejected it and ignored it, they built it up within their fictional reality. And now if you look back, you see their fictional reality and the real world no longer exists. They bought the records, right? So if you look back in time, the records of note, the papers of note, it's the Ministry of Truth, right? It's just been revised, right? So the world's a crazy, crazy place. And who knows what's going on? And who knows what's next? But I feel like this chess game's coming to a close and we're about to lose. And people really don't understand the magnitude of the loss. Man, I hope I'm wrong. Thanks for watching, everybody. Check out CanadaPoly.com. Check out CanadaReport.co. Check out SpeakingMoistly.co. And have a wonderful, wonderful day.